And Brad and Desi, I hope your vacation goes on uninterrupted. Have a great one. You deserve a break. Love their Green News Report each and every time. And I am joining you from the mountains, but still doing my show today. Been on the road the last couple of weeks. Hope you enjoyed the Best of Betsy programs that PRN was kind enough to play. And we are back live with you with a really exciting news-filled show today. I'm going to be introducing the guests in just a moment. But it's one of my favorite subjects, as you know, climate change. We'll be getting the latest on the politics surrounding that from a couple of people in the know. In our second half, though, I really am going back to my roots with my trash talk beginnings that started about 15 years ago with my reduce, reuse, recycle waste features on CBS Radio. And we're going to be talking about the latest pet peeve of mine. Perhaps it is yours as well. Have you noticed that straws are being served everywhere, whether you want them or not, whether you ask for them or not, whether it's in a cocktail where perhaps it's justified because it looks pretty, but I don't know how functional they really are. But now every drink, every soda, every juice, every glass of water, it seems in almost every restaurant I've been going to, has a straw in it, usually the big red plastic kind that will maybe be used, maybe not, but certainly will be in the landfill forever, made out of plastic, which last time I checked was sourced by petroleum. Seems to me that's probably not the healthiest thing to be putting up to your lips and sipping your drink through, not to mention don't we need petroleum for some other things, like fueling our cars and our economy. We'll be talking about someone who is leading an effort to get straws, if not banned, then at least get them reduced. And I can tell you that their effort aimed at Applebee's restaurant, probably because it's one of the biggest offenders, is the straw that broke the camel's back. Sorry about that for me. And I decided time to get the scoop on what's going on here with all these straws. So we'll be talking to Jonathan Zaidman in our second half. Right now I'm very pleased to bring back to the program D.R. Tucker, who was away for 2 weeks while I was, different parts of the country, of course, and also to welcome to the program, I believe for the first time, Steve Valk. He is the communications director for my favorite green group, Citizens Climate Lobby. That organization, no stranger to this show, and listeners know we've had lots of people on recently from there. Mark Reynolds a few months ago, and then more recently Ellie Sparks and Judy Weiss. And we're going to also be talking to one of the volunteers with the Citizens Climate Lobby in our first segment, and she is Ashley Hunt Martirano. She just wrote a great op-ed piece comparing, the baseball scandal with A-Rod and all the talk about steroids with our climate, which is on steroids. So very pleased to welcome everyone to the show. We should have DR, Steve, and Ashley with us now.
Yes, how are you doing?
Hey, DR, Steve.
Ashley? Hi, Betsy.
Great
to be here.
Great. So much to talk about. Just this week there was the launch of the Green Tea Coalition, and because that is in your hometown, Steve, of Atlanta, perhaps you can, as we go along, share a little bit about what that is going to be taking on, and of course is the founder of the Green Tea Party, which has not quite gotten national attention. I'm very curious to know about these folks and what they have in mind, because they are actually partnering with some Tea Party members, and of course Tea Party and Green don't usually go together, which is what prompted my version of a Green Tea Party. Also, we are learning that PBS has pulled funding for a film called Citizen Coke, but the filmmakers behind that great effort have raised money on Kickstarter and hope to get that documentary, very critical of the ridiculous influence that the Koch brothers have over our future. They're aiming, the Koch brothers, campaign to stop the carbon tax. They have an ad campaign underway, but not to worry, because Citizens Climate Lobby is right there and trying to cut them off at the pass. So we're going to find out all about that. So let's jump in there. Oh, and last but not least, I just see that Republican Senator Ron Johnson has now called climate activists and environmentalists the environmental jihad. You guys catch that from the Republican from Wisconsin?
Yeah, I just saw that today. That's very interesting. It's I guess we're doing our job.
Yeah, so maybe Al Jazeera can cover the environmental jihad, but
there you go.
That's another story. Al Jazeera is coming, and we'll see how well they cover climate change, since when Al Gore was under some fire for selling to the oil interests, he said they do a better job than mainstream American media in covering climate change, and that's pretty ironic, too. So much to talk about. Where to begin? Let's start with you, Steve. Tell us what the Citizens Climate Lobby is planning to do to stop this effort to... let's play the ad first, if we can get the PRN studio to play the ad, then we know what we're talking about.
Sure.
They say the proposed carbon tax is a great deal. They say, don't worry, big corporations will pay the tax. They say it'll help the environment. But what they say isn't true. Corporations who pay the carbon tax will pass the costs on to us. One proposal will cost a family of four $2,000 every year. Gas will increase 50 cents a gallon. Electricity rates will go up too. Jobs will be lost, shipped overseas. Supporters say it's a small price to pay for the environment, but it's just not true. Greenhouse gas emissions in America are going down, but in India and China, they're skyrocketing. And a carbon tax in America won't do a thing to stop it. Why would you support a tax that hurts families, cuts jobs, and doesn't help the environment? You wouldn't. Call Congresswoman Kyrsten Sinema at 602-956-2285. Tell her to say no to the carbon tax, paid for by the American Energy Alliance.
And that would be whom exactly? And where is that ad airing, Steve? And thanks for forwarding that. That's priceless, really.
Oh, it's great stuff. I always love ads that you know, kind of go through the they say, you know. Yeah, of course, you never know who they is.
But the environmental jihad, don't you know?
Exactly. So what's going on here is that the carbon tax, or as we like to refer to it, the revenue neutral carbon tax that would actually give money back to the public. Everybody thinks that this has no chance of going anywhere in Congress, so if it doesn't have any chance of going anywhere, why is a fossil fuel industry group now funding to the tune of about $150,000 advertising in five congressional districts to beat it back? There was a story in the Hill about this where they quoted Benjamin Cole from the Energy Alliance. He says, "We're hoping to put the final nail in the coffin on the carbon tax." And so, I'm kind of flattered actually that we're getting this much attention from them. But so to counter this this ad campaign that they've instituted, Ellie Sparks, another one of our staffers who works a lot with our volunteers, she kind of coined the phrase, "Let's dance." You know, so the fossil fuel industry has invited us to dance on this issue, and so we're gonna dance with them. So they have ads that are being aired in upstate New York, central New Jersey, east coast Florida, southern Illinois, and Arizona. Now, of course, $150,000, that's a drop in the bucket for these guys. You know, that's a good cocktail party, maybe. Mm-hmm. But even so, you know, we're thinking, hey, we're not going to, you know, let this go unchallenged. And so we have volunteer groups who are either in these districts or near these districts. And what we've decided to do is to generate as many letters to the editor, op-eds, editorials, in newspapers that are in this district, in these districts, to counter these claims that are in the ads. And of course, if you listen to the ads and all the claims that they're making, of course, they're not taking into account the possibility of a revenue-neutral carbon tax that gives money back to the public. So if the public's getting the money back, it's not going to cost the family a couple of $1,000s, and what it's going to do is it's going to stimulate jobs in the clean energy sector, and that claim about India and China and all this other stuff. Well, you know, the other part of this is that we can have border tariffs for countries that are, you know, exporting goods to the United States that don't have carbon taxes, and so once we start doing that, they'll say, well, you know, why are we paying money to the U.S. Treasury? Let's get our own carbon tax. And so this is a way that we can actually, without a formal treaty, start spreading the whole carbon price, regimen around the world. So, but anyway, you know, so that's what's going on with that, and that's been our response to it.
Okay, I want to hear DR and Ashley's response to this effort, but just read an article in The Economist about China being the world's biggest polluter. So it is true that they have, you know, surpassed us in terms of overall emissions, and, you know, the air is terribly polluted, and it's causing all kinds of illness and death and concern. But they also talk about how, because of the way their government is set up, they can, you know, impose new regulations, new technology, and they're doing that. So while they're the biggest emitter, they're also whipping our butts in terms of investing in renewable energy, clean technology, and hopefully leapfrogging over some of the mistakes we've made. So, DR, what do you think?
Well, actually, I'm going to pose my response in the form of a question to Ashley. As I was listening to that commercial, it reminded me that the language that speaker used, the language of the Koch brothers, you know, Frank that wrote that ad, that's the same ad that another Koch brothers associate, former Senator Scott Brown, used to use when he used to criticize any effort to put a price on carbon, which is why climate activists here in Massachusetts did him a favor and retired his behind last November. What does it say to you that they can't come up with any new arguments, that they're using the same arguments against carbon pricing that they used 3 or 4 years ago when Scott Brown was running? I didn't know the Koch brothers believed in recycling to this extent. Have you noticed that they can't come up with any new arguments against the prospect of putting a price on carbon?
Well, to me, that means that they're really underestimating what the public is learning about this and what volunteers and Citizens Climate Lobby are gearing up to dance with them about. I think that it's actually very useful for us that they haven't changed their game plan, because now we can kind of know, okay, they're going to respond in this way, so we can go ahead and plan our next three steps.
Well put. And Ashley, speaking of well put, you wrote a really terrific essay comparing what's happening in baseball and the use of steroids, and that, of course, is not just unique to baseball. Many other sports, cycling in particular, have been heavily focused on that, but how the metaphor that, I'm not even sure who came up with it, but I'm sure it was one of our climate scientist friends, our climate is on steroids, meaning you cannot tie any one weather event to climate change, but the, if you will, rising tide is lifting all boats, that it's fueling the atmosphere, which is why we're seeing more extreme weather, from, you know, heat to drought to floods to tornadoes to twisters to hurricanes to wildfires.
That's right. Just like Alex Rodriguez was in the news recently for the steroid scandal in baseball, you know, our weather is on steroids, and Major League Baseball has taken some, action for the players that were involved in that, and I think it's time for Congress to step up and take some action for our climate that's on steroids.
And what about the fact that media is so focused? DR and I talk about this a lot. Regular listeners will know about how part of it is what the media, mainstream media, focuses on, especially broadcast. They, you know, cover a lot about sports, a lot about finances, a lot about celebrities. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. And yet the biggest story of our time, which anyone who's paying attention agrees it is, goes, it's getting mentioned, and, you know, all too rarely in conjunction with these extreme weather events, although we're starting to hear that more. It's still, as we just heard in the Green News Report, still a minimum of the information getting out there, and too many Americans still get their news from Fox and other conservative outlets. So how much blame do you put on, you know, I don't know if the media always says we're giving the public what they want, the public says what more enlightened members of the citizenry say, why do they cover this crap? So how big a problem do you think, Ashley, that is, that, you know, we are not seeing this concern reflected, you know, in the evening newscast?
It is concerning to me. I would hope that the media would start reporting on this and taking it more seriously. And also, I think in the attempt to appear to be balanced, a lot of the mainstream media will give equal time to people that are talking about climate change and then climate change deniers. And I think that's misleading to the general public, because the vast majority of climate scientists agree, 97% of scientists agree, that climate change is real and that it's caused by humans. And so I think that the majority of the American public doesn't really know that statistic to be true, because they're being led to believe that it's 50-50. You know, it's open for debate. There's the possibility that scientists are wrong about this. So I think the more that we get this information out there to the American public and to the media, the more we'll be able to swing that pendulum into reflecting the true state of the world on this.
That brings us to another question in terms of the false balance in the media and the false balance in Congress. Do you think that the extremism of some of the recent statements from the congressmen who deny climate change is of a level so severe that'll effectively have a sort of backlash effect where people figure, hey, wait a minute, if he's going so intensely against the science, he or she is probably out to lunch? I'm thinking of the latest, you know, stories about some of the really weird statements. There's this congressman in Florida now who's blaming God for current pollution generated by man-made activities. And you know, when you hear about certain congressmen, such as Steve King in Iowa, who, you know, is basically saying, you know, it's getting cooler and that sort of thing, do you think they're just getting so over the top with their denial that the average person starts saying, hey, wait a minute, maybe these guys are wrong and maybe the scientists are right?
Yeah, DR, you're absolutely right on this. As a matter of fact, there's been some polling that came out, and this is a bipartisan poll done by the League of Conservation voters, you know, showing that particularly among younger voters, you know, people under 35, of both parties, vast majorities of them would vote against, you know, somebody who would deny the science of climate change or try to block solutions to it. So they're really, you're absolutely right, they're starting to marginalize themselves, you know, with the electorate now. They really are.
And speaking of the League of Conservation Voters, this week on Monday they launched a $2 million ad campaign, and that's, I guess, what triggered the environmental jihad comment. And I believe it's running in, what, about half a dozen states talking about climate?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And that's fantastic. I was hoping that one of the bigger organizations like LCV would jump in when this ad campaign came up from the American Energy Alliance, and sure enough, they did. And you're gonna start seeing more and more of this as you know the politicians and the big green groups are seeing that the pendulum is really starting to swing on this toward people who understand that there's a problem out there and are saying, okay, why isn't Congress doing something about this?
Yeah, it's about time the deniers get called out, you know,
yes.
From where the money's coming from, Koch brothers, to the, you know, supposed leadership representing us, supposedly, in Washington, and just, you know, really point them out to be the, you know, at the very least, the buffoons they are, and at the worst, you know, the efforts to really confuse the public, which, as we're saying, have been somewhat successful.
Betsy, did you hear about the Unicorn Awards?
No.
Okay, so I think it's Organizing for America, but I think they had, you know, something like 135 of these. They're like, you know, little statuettes that have a unicorn on it, and they're handing these out. They're awarding these to climate deniers in Congress, you know, because it's kind of like, well, if you don't believe in science, you know, then, you know, you probably believe in unicorns or something. But I thought that was kind of a cute way of calling them out.
Yeah, and a unicorn is especially apt symbol since they can easily put their heads in the sand.
That's right.
And apparently, from what I understand, is that a staffer for Senator Rubio in Florida actually accepted the unicorn award, which makes it even more interesting.
Did he know what he was getting?
He might not have. I know there was an effort a couple years ago by 350.org to present, again, the former Senator Scott Brown with a Dirty Bird Award for, as they called it, for you know, not standing up to climate deniers. But you do begin to wonder that, you know, 25 years after Jim Hansen's you know, prophetic speech to the Senate, you do wonder if there is a momentum turning point now in favor of climate action. You know, obviously, you know, you had President Obama's speech, which was extraordinary, but you can make an argument that he should deliver a primetime address on that subject. You know, despite the intransigence of the denialists in Congress, could this summer of 2013 be remembered as a turning point where Americans finally said, a majority of Americans finally said, now we need action, and if Congress doesn't deliver action, we might be cleaning up the House in 2014?
I think you're right. And we had a conference in late June where we had 370 you know, members. I think we had a guest, Betsy, on your show that talked about this, but a lot of the conversations that we were having in Republican offices, when we started talking about revenue neutral carbon tax as the conservative alternative to regulation, they were really listening and they were really interested. And I honestly believe that there are Republicans, not all Republicans, but I think there's enough Republicans out there who understand the problem, understand that it's in our national interest to do something about it. And if we can get them the support in their districts to step up and be brave. I think we might be closer to introducing a bipartisan carbon tax than most people think. As I like to say, the tipping point for objects in a side mirror on a car, the tipping point for political will on a carbon tax might be closer than it seems.
That's a perfect segue, Steve, to the Green Tea Coalition, which launched yesterday in your hometown, Atlanta. I don't know if you were in attendance. Tell us what you know about this. I guess the common denominator between the Tea Party that more of us are familiar with and that now the Green Tea Coalition is that they are for free market, less government intervention, and now with solar prices coming down, they like the competitive aspect of that. I doubt they're in favor of a carbon tax, but do you have hope for that?
It's going to take a little while on the carbon tax. I actually had lunch with Debbie Dooley, who's the head of the Georgia Tea Party Patriots. And if I can kind of give people a little bit of background, so what happened in this is in Georgia, the Public Service Commission had a hearing and a vote on Georgia Power's plan for what they were going to do to generate electricity, and that plan did not involve any renewable energy, and so the Tea Party, which is looking out for consumers, and Sierra Club, which is looking out for the environment, and Georgia Solar Utilities, which is looking out for solar power, they all came together and went to the Public Service Commission and said, hey, why isn't this in their plan? And the Public Service Commission agreed, and now Georgia Power is going to have to add 500 megawatts of solar power to the electricity that they produce in Georgia. But as I said, I had lunch with Debbie, and they're not quite there on anything that has the word tax in it yet. They're getting a lot of heat from Americans for Prosperity, which is the Koch-funded group, and they're really deathly afraid that, if they got anywhere near something talking about a tax, even if it's revenue neutral, that they would kind of lose their conservative credentials. And so it's going to take a little while, but I'm going to introduce them to Mr. Bob Inglis and, see if he can help them understand, the conservative argument for this.
Perfect. I hope to get Debbie Dooley on the show perhaps next week. Are they trying to have a national presence, or is this just Georgia, the Green Tea Coalition?
Well, Georgia definitely, and I think there's some groups out in Arizona and also up in North Carolina that are starting to do this. Definitely in Arizona. So it's kind of a coalition that's starting to spread around. So it's a very encouraging development. Like I said, these are groups that, on 99% of issues they don't agree, but you can find some areas of agreement on these issues where you have a common objective, and that's what they're doing.
Exactly the thinking behind the Green Tea Party, which I came up with a couple of years ago when the Tea Partiers, 30 of them were elected to Congress in 2010, and none of them, quote, believed in climate change, and they were frothing at the mouth about taxes and big government, and I at least was one of, I'm sure, others, but I said, wait a minute, what about those of us who are steamed that they're playing politics with their only planet, and they are now in the legislature? These people are are representatives, and didn't quite get off the ground, but we talk about it all the time here. Maybe it's an idea whose time has come. Maybe we should form a coalition with the Green Tea Coalition. I'm not quite sure I'm ready to get in bed with them, but it's interesting. It's intriguing. And, really, it's whatever catches people's attention.
That sounds like you're ahead of the curve there, Bessie.
Once again, I came up with Don't Be Fueled in 2002, Mothers for Clean and Safe Vehicles, Hybrids, Not Hummers, when we went into Iraq and, everyone in their giant SUVs had bumper stickers on that said, bring our soldiers home. God bless America, bring our soldiers home. Keep our soldiers safe, and of course, keep Tahoe blue. And then when I was interviewing Van Jones, DR knows as well, but I'm proud to say that in 2005, when he was calling his movement Green Jobs, Not Jails, I said, how about green collar jobs? And he obviously took it and ran with it. So one of these days I'll get some credit or something off the ground, but I appreciate doing these shows because talking to people like you keeps me grounded and sane and feeling like we're not alone in this, DR and I. And we just have a couple minutes left, so I wanted to give everybody a chance for last thoughts. Start with you, DR, and then Ashley and Steve.
Well, I just wanted to say, it's great to see this Green Tea Coalition. It's great to see that at least when it comes to energy issues, people can say that, you know, Americans for Depravity, as I like to call them, isn't wrong. There was a great quote from Debbie Dooley saying that, you know, we agree with Americans for, you know, Coke's prosperity on a number of issues, but when it comes to energy, they have their own specific interests. And that's a great thing to see because, you know, if the Tea Party movement is to be ideologically independent, it has to be independent of fossil fuel industry as well as other entities. So it's nice to see this Green Tea Coalition taking shape, and hopefully the federal officials, the people running for Congress and Senate in Georgia, are taking notice of this and realizing that this is a potentially a politically potent coalition.
Excellent.
Yeah, I would second that, what DR said. I'm optimistic about where things are going with this. I have an inkling that there are some moderate Republicans on Capitol Hill that are wanting to change their tune on climate change. They see the writing on the wall, like what Steve mentioned before with the League of Conservation Voters poll about young voters taking climate change seriously and that being a potential issue that could cause them to not vote for somebody. I think they see that it's a moral issue. I think that they see that it is part of their conservative values. The word conservation and conservative come from the same root word. So I see that this is going to be moving forward, and that's why I'm really excited to be involved with Citizens Climate Lobby, because I think we're at the front line with all of this, and we're willing to work with whoever wants to work on getting a revenue-neutral carbon tax passed, whether it be a Democrat, an Independent, or a Republican. And that is what is really cool about all of this.
And Ashley, I'm going to have you on another time so we can discuss what's cool about your background, and that is you were a psychology student in grad school, studied clinical psychology, and then left that for your bigger passion, the environment, and very interested in human behavior change and how we can get more Americans to, you know, become more aware, more active. That's exactly what my career path was. I went from, academic path prior to that, went from being a psych major to journalism to green talk show host to ecomaniac, radio activist, call it what you will. So I'm really interested in that piece of it. So that has been missing from activism, I agree. So we'll follow up with you on that. And then Steve, just parting thoughts there from what's probably steamy Atlanta.
I have a specific request for your listeners, and that is I'm going to tease everybody here. We have a Republican who I think is interested in introducing a carbon tax bill. But the big obstacle right now is that on the Ways and Means Committee in Congress, the chairman has decided that there's a moratorium on any new tax legislation until comprehensive tax reform is done. So the chairman of that committee is Dave Camp. His district is in central Michigan, in the southern part of it is Lansing, Michigan. So if you have no people, you know, who are in central Michigan, we want to hear from you at Citizens Climate Lobby. We want to get a group going in that district so we can start putting the pressure on Camp to lift that moratorium and allow one of his Republican colleagues to introduce a carbon tax bill.
All right. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you so much for joining us, Steve Valk, Ashley Hunt Martirano, and, of course, my co-host and comrade-in-arms, D.R. Tucker, the smartest Republican or maybe former Republican I know. You know, we really ought to set up a site where we can share everything that you send to us on our, you know, small email list, D.R., because you are the best catcher of anything related to climate and environment or green on the Internet. So working on that. And I want to wish all of you a great Green Week, and when we come back right after this short break, we're going to be talking about the last straw, the one for me, and that is also the focus of an organization that is having a petition drive underway to get Applebee's and other American restaurants and bars really across the land to stop serving straws, whether anybody needs them or wants them or not. Stay tuned for that.